broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And good evening and welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go. Well, we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And we are your intrepid hosts as well as guests, to be quite honest with you. It's nice to be on the radio with you again this evening. We are going to have Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills to come on and talk economics with us tonight. He's going to be talking employment, and he's going to be talking about a plan that they're implementing at Ted's of Beverly Hills to try and put some people back to work.
This is Ted from Ted to Beverly Hills, and thank you, Phil, for that intro. I hope we got in on time. I want to tell everyone, please stay tuned. We've got a great idea. Try to get people working again in this country.
Oh, we almost didn't make the connection there, Ted. Bud, you all right?
Yeah, fell down.
Bud tripped and fell over when he was running to get the phone call up on the board. How are you doing tonight?
Phil, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me on the program. Thank you for your association with Ted's of Beverly Hills all these many years, and a very pleasant good evening to everybody. And we think we've got a plan. I think it's exciting, and I think it's exciting if people can broaden their mind and recognize the reality of life, employment, the reality of how we are as human beings, and let's quit pretending that we're superhuman. Let's start acting like human beings to each other and acknowledge the real hurts that we feel and the pain that we've been through and just what unemployment and what a bad economy does to all of us. And if we can do that and we can find a way to heal those wounds as well as help people get back to work, I think we've got something.
Well, Ted, I know that I was talking with you earlier before we went on the air, and what you're going to implement at Ted's of Beverly Hills is, frankly, an offer at double minimum wage. So minimum wage is how much?
Minimum wage is $8.50. And for $17 an hour, we are offering jobs at Ted's of Beverly Hills. They're not glamorous jobs, but they are the jobs that you're going to find in restaurants. And they have to be entry-level jobs. And so these jobs would be basically busing tables. They would be jobs that have to do with washing dishes. They would be jobs that have to do with working in our pantry. Some of these jobs are to assist what we call a sous chef, which is the chef that is preparing the salads and so forth.
Uh-huh.
They would be jobs, entry-level jobs at the valet stand, which is basically just collecting the keys from people and giving people tickets and things like that, not really parking the cars. You get cut on some of the tips, but not all of them. The other jobs that we foresee having on a very, very limited basis would be to work some of the tables in our prime rib room when people just sit down, make sure they have water, make sure they have the appetizer menu before the food server gets there. So these are really basic entry-level jobs, entry-level restaurant jobs that we are offering at Ted's of Beverly Hills at double minimum wage. And here is, I think, where we are able to, as I mentioned, do a little bit of the healing that has caused so many bad feelings, Phil. You know, and
boy, there's nothing truer said, Ted, that people have recession and money problems cause such rancor. You know,
they really do, and it causes hurt feelings and it causes misunderstandings, and so you're not only out of a job and you're not only having a hard time making ends meet, but you feel yourself resenting the world around you. We don't want to have that, and what we are hoping to achieve with this program is not only to put some people to work, but to also get some healing going.
And all right, let's talk a little bit about that. We're talking to Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, where they're offering up entry-level jobs there at the restaurant for double minimum wage. And there is a reason for that, and we'll get to it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. So why the double minimum wage?
Because we are offering these jobs maybe to the most vulnerable people of all, and those are people who have been put out of work, Phil, by this recent recession, who may be family men, they may be women who have more than one or two children at home? Heads of households, in other words. They may be people who had an executive-level job. They might have been people who had vice presidential jobs, corporate vice presidential jobs. And they could be older people. I'm anticipating that we will get people in their late 30s, 40s, maybe even 50s. And here is the inspiration for this, Phil. I think those people are tough enough to go ahead and take advantage of something like this because they know, maybe more so than a younger worker, what it takes to make it in this world.
And yeah, but why are you offering these jobs, these entry level, as you call them, and it is very menial, some of it, which is busboy and dishwasher.
Yeah.
Why would you offer those jobs to former executives, former corporate executive level management people?
Well, here is where the healing that I was talking about can begin. I think that in my life, as I was trying to start a restaurant, as I was trying to start a business, as I was trying to get the capital together to fund certain aspects of my business, as I was trying to hire people, as I was trying to get suppliers lined up, I ran into a lot of people that didn't want to make life easy for me. And they were these very people that I'm talking about. They were middle management to upper management types. They were vice presidents. They were competitive people. A lot of them tried to stop our restaurant, our business. A lot of them tried to destroy, to be perfectly honest with you, our business. They wouldn't lend us money. They looked down their nose at us. They looked at us taking up a prime piece of real estate in Beverly Hills and tried to buy us out, tried to move us off the block, said you'll never make it. And so on and so forth. And that caused in me a great deal of resentment. There were nights I would go home, and Marcy can tell you, Bill, this was before my son was born. There were nights I would go home, and I would sit and stare for hours with just a glass of bourbon in front of me. And I would just look out the window. And she'd say, what are you doing? I'd say, you know, I'm thinking of what I want to do to these people. And it sounds a little scary. It isn't really, because you get over it and you, as your success continues. But now I have the opportunity to heal. And what do I mean by that? I can give these people a job at my restaurant, washing dishes, cleaning out the grease traps, cleaning up the tables. I can tell them to go and clean up, and we've had this happen, Phil, vomit. If someone gets sick on the floor, go clean that up. I can tell them to go get a car. In other words, I can finally heal by giving back to them a little bit of the humiliation they gave to me. And in the process, I'm giving them a job at double the minimum wage.
All right, well, hold on for a minute, because the healing you're talking about here is just yours.
Well, yeah, it is the healing that I'm talking about is a man who was trying to make a business go and was stepped on and pushed back and insulted every step of the way by these executive types. And now they're out of a job. The recession has got them flat on their rear ends. They need work. I'm going to give them that work. But the work they're going to have will be work that is menial, that I had to tell you, I will enjoy seeing some of these people having to clean grease out of a grease trap, having to take our floorboards out at night from the kitchen and scrub them down. I'll enjoy that.
And all right, do you feel as if this is when I hear you talk this way, Ted, it does, to me, it doesn't sound, and you know, forgive what I'm about to say, but it doesn't really sound healthy.
In what way?
It sounds like you, it just doesn't sound, I know you're giving them a job. I know you're giving them an entry-level job at a restaurant, and you're making it very clear that it's going to be menial work, and you're giving them, but you're doubling up the minimum wage. It sounds like you're pretending to give people work when, in point of fact, you're just getting your kicks humiliating them.
No, that was something that we anticipated that people would say. And I am telling you now, the answer to that is you're wrong, Phil. And why can I say that? Because I was very clear up front in the beginning telling you what I was going to do. In other words, I didn't try to hide it. I didn't try to say to you that you know, I didn't hide the fact that I have a grudge and I have borne some bruises and some heartache and some attacks and some assaults from these people that I really have hurt me. I haven't hidden that. I've been upfront about it.
You have. Yes, you have. I'll give you that. Yes, you have.
All right. So what I'm saying is I will give these people work at double the minimum wage, but when they come into my restaurant to be a busboy, to be a dishwasher, to assist in valet, to get water in the bar, to get water in the main dining area, to go out and light the fire pit, or whatever job I have to give you, I will enjoy watching former executives that used to push me around having to clean up vomit, having to take out grease, having to unplug a toilet. And there isn't too much more in this world that is more demeaning than being sent into the men's room after a customer has plugged the toilet up and having to go in there with a snake or a plunger.
All right, well, don't you have a plumber take care of that?
Not if it's a minor. If it's just it's been plugged up by too much toilet paper or somebody, you know, plugged it up.
How many people do you think are going to take advantage of this?
Well, I imagine a lot of people who are out of work, who need the work. You know,
no, but how many executives are going to go down to your restaurant after hearing you say you're going to have your kicks watching them unplug toilets at $17 an hour? Most of these guys are going to be at home sitting on a resume or whatever they're doing these days, sending out their cover letters and waiting for the right job to come along.
Well, let me tell you something, Phil. There was a book, and you had the guy on your show, How Starbucks Saved My Life. This guy... you know the book?
Yes, I do.
Okay, that guy was an executive. That guy was a six-figure-a-year executive on Madison Avenue. He took a job at Starbucks. You want to know why? He needed a job. He needed a job. He needed the health insurance.
And you provide health insurance?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And that guy needed a job. He needed the health insurance. And he was a former Madison Avenue advertising executive at around mid-six figures a year. And he wasn't too proud. You know?
Yeah, but there was nobody there at Starbucks making him clean toilets.
No, but that one girl that he worked for did say to him, don't you abuse these homeless people that want to come in here and use the toilet. In other words, she taught him how to respect people that sleep in gutters. All right? Well, that's what I'm going to provide for these people that come into my... That's what I'm going to provide for these executives that come to work for me. I'm going to show them how to deal with life from the sewer up.
Well, there's a difference. He was being taught by a young lady who herself was not a very highly paid individual. She'd come up rough. She'd come up through some pretty tough circumstances, and she herself was a working class. And so she was speaking from a place of authority.
Phil, I am speaking from a place of authority, but I am removed from that by some 30-plus years. I haven't been in that situation for over 30 years.
All right, we're going to be back to talk to Ted Bell from Tens of Beverly Hills as we talk about employing former executives at his restaurant as busboys and as dishwashers so that they can get back into the workforce and so Ted can also humiliate them and laugh at them as they wash dishes and clean out grease traps. Doesn't sound very healthy to me, but Ted claims he's been up front with us. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Hey, everybody. Ted from Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. When we talk about steak, we know exactly what we're talking about. You want the ribeye, you want the prime rib, you want the New York cut, the Kansas City? We got it. A lot of people don't talk about Kansas City steak anymore. We've got it at Ted's.
Oh, man, Kansas City cut, the big...
You know, we got the porterhouse, Phil. We just got some beautiful porterhouse steaks in, and these serve two, Although knowing you, and I say this with all due respect, Bill, you can polish one of those border houses off, can't you?
I think I actually came to your place one night, and if I'm not mistaken, was it a 42-ounce?
That's our porterhouse.
I think I ate the whole dang thing myself, although I will say I doggy-bagged some of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing like a beautiful steak, and nobody appreciates a steak better than Ted's of Beverly Hills, I can tell you that. And I know the iceberg and all of the salads. We have the iceberg wedge with the blue cheese and the bacon bits. Oh, it'll knock you out. We've got a beautiful Caesar salad that I think people who don't like anchovies, we do our Caesar dressing. We blend the anchovy in with the dressing. We don't lay the anchovy on top of the lettuce like somebody's dumps. Excuse me for saying that.
No, your Caesar dressing is fantastic. I don't mind anchovies. I know a lot of people hate them, but it's delicious. Let's get back to talking with Ted here about this employment program where you will employ former executives, people that were literally these mid-six-figure people that we were talking about here. You were talking about the gentleman from Starbucks.
His father was a famous writer.
Brendan Gill, I think.
Yeah.
You will hire these people at double the minimum wage, and the trade-off, you say, is in the healing, and that is that you get to humiliate these people. Is that a healthy thing to do?
Is it a healthy thing to do what, Bill?
Is it healthy to say, you're hired, now I get to watch you crawl around on the floor, and you know...
No, we're not making people crawl on the floor. I'm simply getting the satisfaction of seeing the very people that turned me down for loans and turned their noses up at me when I was trying to make a business go. Now I get to watch them, unplug a toilet. And I don't think that's not cruel. I think that helps me heal and it gives them a job.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445 is our number. Let's go to Jonathan in Louisville, Kentucky. Jonathan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Ted Bell. Go ahead.
How you doing, Phil?
Good.
I was wondering if this guy has actually thought about, instead of hiring executives for these type of positions, why not hire some veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan that would really love a $17 an hour job?
Well, I don't know that those guys are unemployed. I think a lot of them, first of all, they have their service pay, and secondly, our veterans, our service people, I think, are better taken care of than a lot of service people have been in the past. I think we are recognizing the great contributions that they have made to our freedom. And so I think that they're well taken care of in comparison to these executives who are in their 40s. A lot of them are not necessarily hireable. A lot of them are in their 50s. And a lot of them, like I said, used to think they were really something special. And now they got to get knocked down a peg. And I'm happy to give them the job. Yes, sir.
They're having just as much trouble finding decent paying jobs as an executive would. And quite frankly, I know veterans right now who would love to work at your steakhouse for $17 an hour.
Well, I don't know. I that's what you say. I can tell you that the veterans that I talk to are guys that obviously we admire them. We thank them. We hold them in high esteem. Just the other day, I was getting on an airplane coming back home from New York, and the first thing they say, I don't know if you know this, Jonathan, our first-class passengers and any uniform member of the military gets to get on the plane first, you know? Did you know that?
Yeah, I know that.
Huh? Okay. So we already give them a lot of perks. I'm talking about guys, and I don't want to hurt veterans. This is a job where I want to give a man a job, but I also want to get a little payback for the way I was treated. Do you understand? Maybe you don't get that part of it.
No, I get that part, but you give a veteran a job and give him a paycheck, he's got a reason to hold his head up again, and I think that's something we need.
I understand that, but I don't want the veteran, I got nothing against. I don't want to hurt him.
Well, you wouldn't be hurting him, paying him $17 an hour, double minimum wage. That's better than and having trouble finding a job that is.
Where do I get my healing? I need my healing. I was treated bad.
See, what's going on here, Jonathan, and I don't necessarily agree with it. Ted wants to hire these executives so that he can humiliate them, making them unplug toilets and clean out grease traps for some perceived slight.
I mean,
not perceived.
About this, but
mean, are you really going to get satisfaction from seeing a guy, you know, scrub up some, you know, do a really bad job, honestly, on cleaning up a toilet?
Yeah.
I would rather see a former executive who thought he was something special than one of our wonderful veterans cleaning. I wouldn't have a veteran clean a toilet ever, ever. It just, I wouldn't feel right about it. I'd rather have one of these former Wall Street guys do it.
Jonathan, thanks for your call. We'll be back with more from Ted Bell on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
What? Boy, that was fast.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. I can't even do it that fast.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Hey, everybody, Ted's of Beverly Hills. In a minute, we're going to just put up on the Bill TV in HD, and I think, Bill, you have it right now. Oh, there it is. One of those beautiful steaks is our
Ted's.
Would you let me say what I want to say?
I'm sorry, you got to get it. Ted, you have to say it in the time.
Well, I wanted to mention our baseball steak.
It's delicious. Delicious.
Yeah, but I didn't get to say it because, but there, well, that whole, you're not showing anything. What is that there on the left? Is that our baseball steak?
That's your beautiful,
It's all beautiful. Everything we do is beautiful. Everything that we serve is beautiful. All of the waitresses are beautiful. I'm beautiful, if you, you know.
No, it's, yeah, but that is your T-bone.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Phil. That is our gorgeous skin. It is gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's when you're a restaurateur, and especially when you're a guy like me who's been in the business as long as I have, I got to tell you something, and I'm not kidding. And I, of course I am kidding, but I mean it in almost a literal way. Steak, a good steak, you start to look at it the same way you size up a woman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can kind of, you know.
Can you see a little bit of what I'm saying?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I look at a steak. And I think, man, would I love to rip into you, you know? And I don't think that way about women. I mean, you're not going to say I want to rip into you, but you certainly, you know.
No, I understand what you're saying. You want to make love to that steak, you know?
Yeah, you don't just want to eat the steak. And God forgive me for saying what I'm about to say. You want to rub it all over your face. And when you think of a woman.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I think we're getting a little graphic.
I love that steak, and I just love being in the steak business. So when I say that we're hiring these guys from Wall Street to do these jobs, Phil, I am saying that because I not only do I want them to have these jobs at twice the minimum wage, but there's a very real consideration here. I was humiliated by these people. You understand?
Yeah, but it's. I think what that young man didn't get calling from Louisville, and what I think a lot of people don't understand, is there are people that really need this work. Okay.
No, I know that, Phil. I understand.
Well, please let me just articulate it, and there are a lot of people that could really use the jobs that you're offering. The $17 an hour is a very nice wage for an entry level job at a restaurant. But you're only offering this to executives so you can get some payback.
No, I'm not just so I can get payback. I'm offering it to them so they can get back on their feet because these are men and women, Phil, understand, that used to make a very, very good salary. And to have to start all over again, and I heard the gentleman that was on your program the other night, Reverend, was his name Reverend Rennick?
Pastor Rennick, yeah.
Pastor Rennick, he was saying, you know, carrying somebody's slop jars, man's hands weren't made to carry another man's slop jar. Well, guess what? Yes, they were, if you humiliated Ted Bell. Because your hands may have been made to count money, but when you humiliate Ted Bell, and I'm Ted Bell, and when I say I'm Ted Bell, I'm part of the Beverly Hills business establishment, you know, but when you humiliate Ted Bell, your hands are no longer made to count money. Your hands have now been remade to carry slop buckets. You see?
And see, I can hear the anger in your voice.
Well, so what is that? What are you, Dr. Joyce Brothers? Oh, see, I can hear the anger in your voice.
I didn't say it like that.
Yes, you did say it like that. What's the guy's name? Is Bud Dickman there?
Yeah, I'm right here, Mr. Bell.
Okay, what did Phil say?
He goes, you know, I can hear the anger in your voice.
I didn't say it like that at all. You're just kissing up to Bell. Every time I get a guest on here, you're the biggest backstabber in the world, bud. Thank God I got Robert. Robert, how did I sound?
You went like something along the lines of, I can hear it in your voice. I mean, I got to be honest.
Backstabbers, huh? Sounds like we are all in unanimity on this one. When you said, I can hear it in your voice, you did a Tim Gunn. Oh, God, was it a Tim Gunn.
And all right, so I did. Point is, you sound angry, and you sound angry. You sound like a guy that is getting his kicks humiliating people, all right? 877.
Whoa, sunshine. What do you mean? You sound like a guy that's getting his kicks, and here's the phone number. I don't get to respond.
I got to move on. Did you have something you wanted to say?
Yes. You make it sound like I've got some sadistic personality. I am hurt, and I do want to dish out some payback. I was crapped on, I was stepped on, I was dumped on. So yes, I want a little bit of payback. Why wouldn't I? But I am not doing it exclusively to humiliate former executives. Part of it, yes, I am.
Why would anybody want to work for you?
Because they need the work. Because they need the health insurance.
And you wouldn't want to just give this to a veteran, why?
I don't want to humiliate a veteran. I don't want to watch a veteran clean grease traps out. I don't care how much money I'm paying him.
What if the guy doesn't mind? What if he really needs the work?
I would talk him out of it. By God, I would never in a million years would I want to see one of our great, brave young veterans come home to a job cleaning out a grease trap in a kitchen in a restaurant. I'd rather see some former Wall Street schlub doing that than one of our fine young men and women. No way, no way, no way. Not on my watch. No way.
But what if they want the job?
Well, they ain't getting the job.
So in other words, these guys are going to go on welfare or on unemployment.
They're not going to go on welfare or unemployment. I'd like to meet the guy. Once those young people get back into the workforce, they'll find jobs. Don't worry about it. You're not going to talk me out of this, Phil. You're not going to talk me out of this. I would rather have a former executive, a former Wall Street big shot, a former heavyweight, a former vice president bussing tables and unplugging stuffed-up toilets in my restaurant than to see one of our brave young men and women doing it. It ain't going to happen, okay? And when I say unplugging toilets, let me give an example. We have a very, very good customer. His name is Brady Jones, and Brady is a stockbroker at the Pacific Stock Exchange. Brady is very, very heavy. He's a big guy. He comes in for lunch, and a lot of times he's wearing shorts. He's got the big, thick legs and the big sneakers and the big T-shirt. He's a very big, obese man. And Brady comes in, and it never fails. He gets the stuffed baked potato. He loves to get the asparagus fondue. And he gets the big, thick porterhouse steak. One day, he walks by the maitre d', and he says, excuse me, but I think I plugged up your toilet. And I always say to Brady, and I wasn't there that day, but I always say to him, thank you for letting us know, Brady, because the last thing you want to do is go into the men's room, and you look and you go, oh, God. You know,
okay, I understand.
All right. Brady's a big, fat man, and he plugged my toilet up. You think I'm going to go in there and snake that? No, sir. No.
Oh, I see. So, God, that is vile.
What is?
A big, fat man, and he plugged up your toilet, and you're going to make some former Wall Street executive go in there and plunge it.
$17 an hour. $17 an hour.
877-876-PHIL. I don't know what the kick is, Ted, and you're going to have to explain this to me. And not the kick. I don't know why there is such a need to have that humiliation go on. Let's go to Don in Seattle. Hey, Don, how you doing?
Phil, I'm doing very well. I'm listening to this conversation, and I wanted to ask the gentleman.
Can the gentleman speak up? I can barely hear you.
Yes, sir. I said I wanted to ask you a question. My name is Don. I'm a professor at the university here at the University of Washington, and I have had spells of sabbaticals that I had to take because of some difficulties we've had here. Would I qualify as an executive?
Did you say you're a university professor?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I think so. Anybody that thinks they have all the answers. I think I remember hearing you on Phil's show. Are you a guy that comes on and talks about how you got it all together there in Seattle?
Well, I mean, I'm not looking to get a job at your place only to be humiliated. My question was, would you take someone of a professional stature such as mine, would you employ them? I personally am not interested in going to your restaurant and being humiliated. I think that, you know, I don't think I need to work that bad.
Well, are you currently working?
Right now, we are, as I said, I've been taking a sabbatical because of some difficulty I had with the university. And,
You're not working now, Don?
I'm not working now, no. But my question for the gentleman was, I am not an executive. I'm a university professor, and so I was wondering if would I be in for this abuse that you're talking about.
Well, yes, you would be, because if I didn't know who you were, you wouldn't be. But I've heard you on Phil's show, and you sound like you think you've got all the answers. And it's people like you, to be perfectly honest with you, who made life difficult for me in high school and college, because I had to sweat out every exam. I had to sweat out every single quiz. Every pop quiz, anytime I needed any help at all you guys would do was just look down your nose at me like I was some dumb mouth breather, and you guys got all the big grades. So, yeah, I would humiliate you.
Well, is there any way that I could buy my way out of the humiliation? In other words, if I took the job at...
What do you mean, buy your way out?
Yeah.
If I come down to California, which I'm scheduled to do in the next month, and I take one of these jobs, I don't want to be laughed at or forced to clean vomit up.
Well, if you take the job, you're going to have to clean up vomit. I'm not going to, in other words, you know, I'm not changing the rules of the game just for one guy.
So you're going to make me unplug a toilet?
If Brady comes in for lunch, there's a sure bet you will be unplugging toilets. Brady Jones comes in for lunch every Tuesday at noon, and it has never failed yet that he hasn't plugged the toilet up.
Well, maybe I'm not working that shift.
Well, I'll make sure you are working that shift. If you come down here, and I know your name is Don, right?
Yeah.
I'll put you on that shift.
What is it with you?
What?
I mean, the guy, you know, you're now targeting people.
I've heard this guy on your show.
Whether you've heard him or not on my show, I mean, here's a man saying he needs some work. He's going to be on sabbatical. He's lost his part of his livelihood up there. And you're going to make sure that you put him on the same shift that this customer of yours comes in to eat during, because this guy plugs your toilet up every single time.
That's right. Sir, if you have a problem with that, you certainly don't need to apply for work at my restaurant.
Well, I guess I just really don't have a choice. I mean, the money's too good.
You don't have to take the job.
Well, Mr. Henry, you know, speak for yourself. Okay? Speak for yourself.
See, this guy knows which side the bread the butter's on. You know, don't you, sir?
Yeah, I guess so.
I wouldn't take the job if I were you, Don.
You know, it's easy for you to say, Phil. You're sitting there fat and happy and fat and sassy with your little radio show and all this. That's a guy that needs a job, even if he's got to unplug Brady Jones's toilet. All right, sir, I'll see you when you get down here.
Yeah, sure.
God, did you hear that guy?
What?
He sounded like he was humiliated. He's going to take a job unplugging toilets at your restaurant just so you get your laughs for $17 an hour. Unreal.
Bill, you don't understand, and I've told you this for years, you don't understand the human animal anywhere near as good as I do. I get people. You don't. That's why you're where you are, and I'm where I am. I'm sitting here in a restaurant that I own, serving steaks, having cocktails, and there you are, sweating it out like a grunt every night doing your radio show.
Yeah, okay. We'll be right back here. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills.
What does that mean? Yeah, okay.
I said, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Ted from Ted's of Beverly Hills. And coming up, Professor Emery Clayton on the chances of Herman Cain in the forthcoming presidential election. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Right now on Phil TV and HD, Phil has a beautiful picture of our banquet area. This is our large party room. Come on in with a large party.
Here at Ted's.
or enjoy ours. Do you want to put our meat in your mouth? You don't come in with a large party. We're usually having a large party at Ted's in Beverly Hills, but it's always a lot of fun and enjoying us in there. And I wanted to mention, Phil, you see the wine rack?
Yeah, the picture that we're showing is on Phil TV and HD, and this is of Ted's, this is the main dining area.
That's right. You see the wine rack on the left?
Yeah.
We never go there. We never open up the wine. If I actually went to that wine rack and took a bottle of wine out of there and opened it up and poured it, it would probably taste like malt vinegar.
And well, why do you have it?
For looks. What do you mean, why do I have it? So people think, oh, get a load of him. He's got a wine rack. But you don't store wine that far off the ground. Don't you know anything about wine?
A little bit, yeah.
All right. You don't put wine in a wine rack that's, what is that, about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. You got to keep it cool. If you're going to have wine in a room and you want to store it in a wine rack, it has to be as close to the floor as possible. That's where the cool air is. Unless, of course, you want to have it not refrigerated, but in a cooled containment area. Some people have those.
But you have a wine cellar there, right?
Yes, exactly.
So why do you have that?
For looks, okay? For looks. People don't know the difference. I get a lot of these old, well, I shouldn't say, I get any kind of people will walk in and they'll go, oh, look, he's got a wine rack. Oh, let's look at the wine list. That's what that's for. That's what that's for. When they walk in and they see the wine rack, they go, oh, wine. Let's go, let you get a menu and they... Then they buy a bottle of wine.
Do you help them with their selection?
No, not really. I mean, I have a guy, a sommelier or whatever he's called. I've never been able to pronounce it.
I don't know. I don't know what it's called. It's a guy with the little wine thing.
It's a guy that's got a wine dipper around his neck, exactly. And we've had a number of them over the years. They come down from UC Davis. A lot of these kids that took the wine class up there. And they walk around like they know what they're doing, which sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And they recommend wines, and it all depends on what we're pushing. But that wine rack there sells us a lot of wine.
Well, why don't you just have the wine racks next to the floor, as you say? And
nobody's going to see them there. No one's going to see them there. Look at, leave the restaurant business to me, okay? You do what you do. I'll do what I got to do. Don't talk about Tommy in here. You do. Remember the guy in the movie Raging Bull? Don't bring up Tommy. You do what you got to do. I'll do what I got to do. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, Ted. I don't know that it has anything to do with what we're talking about. We are talking with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Yes, it does have something to do with what we're talking about. We're talking about knowing what it is you're talking about, knowing what you're doing.
All right. In any event, we're talking with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills about this job program that Ted is starting, in which you are, if you're a former executive on Wall Street or just a former executive, CEO, middle management guy, he'll hire you, and he'll hire you at double the minimum wage to basically do all the menial tasks, which include busboy, it includes dishwasher, it includes unplugging the toilets, and all of these things that you want to see these executives do because they humiliated you once, and now it's payback.
Yes, yes, and at least I'm being honest about it. At least I'm being honest about it.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Let's go over to Harvey in Santa Monica. How you doing, Harvey?
Yes, I'm doing great. I wanted to, Ted and I are old friends. Ted, how are you?
Mr. Wyman, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Listen,
You still got that throat problem, huh?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have this throat problem till it'll kill me, I think, you know.
This Harvey Wireman?
Yes, sir, it is, Harvey Wireman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Wireman, I didn't recognize you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I wanted to tell Ted, you know, I have lunch at Ted's, and I go, and I have the Caesar salad, and I have the, God, what do I have, Ted?
You have your two fingers of doers?
No, that's that gray guy, Frank. I have, I usually have a glass of Glenfiddich, that's it.
And oh, yeah, the Glenfiddich, yeah, the 20-year stuff.
Yeah, so I go in there, and I have my salad, and I have my Glenfiddich. That's not a lot for a man to ask for. And then I go, and I use the bathroom. This is a regular routine. I go for the salad, I have my Glenfiddich, and I go use the bathroom, and sometimes, if I don't have any meetings in town, I'll sit and have another drink. Well, I went into that toilet that you got in that place after that Jones. You know, the guy you were just discussing?
Yeah. Was it, it was bad, huh?
Bad. You know, let me tell you something. If you're going to hire... And what was bad about it was that it for I was in having drinks in your place and went and used the bathroom couple times, and it just never ended. It lingered for a long time.
Well, you know, Brady is a great customer of mine, and I've asked him to use a match. And
what are we talking about here? This guy Brady Jones with the plugged up toilet?
Oh yeah, plugged up. You know, when Jones goes in there, you got to use one of the other two or three stalls. But Jones, I think he took two toilets out one day, didn't he?
He did. What happened was, he took out three of my toilets in 1 hour. And we had to send people to the gas station.
Yeah, you got to clean your act up with him, you know.
When are you coming in for a drink?
Well, I thought I'd come over tonight. What time are you done serving?
Yeah, we stopped serving at midnight, but we're open till 2.
All right, well, I got to get going, okay? Thanks very much, Ted. And
what do you mean you got to get going? Is this the end of the hour?
Yeah.
Well, the time flies when you're having fun.
Phil. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we broadcast live here from the El Pacifico each and every night. And behind me is the roiling surf of that beautiful Pacific. We're out on the furthest western edge of this here thing called America. We're very happy to be with you. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. This hour we have with us the inimitable Professor Emory Clayton, a professor of urban studies at L.A. Canyon College. And Professor Clayton will be discussing with us the candidacy of Herman Cain and what exactly that represents. I can only imagine when we talk to progressive or so-called progressive or liberal people what they think of Herman Cain. It never ceases to amaze me that supposed progressive people who consider themselves liberal can always find something nasty to say, I mean, borderline racist to say, about a black conservative candidate. It never fails. It never fails, for at least in my experience, that when we see a black conservative candidate running for any office, so-called progressives and liberals and white progressives and white liberals find something super nasty to say about a black conservative candidate. Herman Cain is what we're going to be talking about, and there he is on our Phil TV and HD, which, by the way, Phil TV and HD is available at philhenryshow.com. If you have a backstage pass, you can watch our program as well as listen to it each and every night. And we have six shows a week, including a local show that we do here in Los Angeles, but five nights a week with you here on our radio show. You can also join us on Phil TV in HD. So get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com. There is the gentleman in question, Mr. Herman Cain, a successful businessman, the owner-operator, a CEO, you name it, of Godfather's Pizza. Obviously a man that we're always talking about having business people running the country or business people with some savvy. I don't think that's a good idea because a businessman is by nature a man who runs a company as an autocrat. He is the guy that sets policy. He's the guy that says how it's going to be, when it's going to be, and where it's going to be. Unless, of course, it's a company that is publicly traded. But that's not exactly the kind of president you want to have. Let's bring on, though, Professor Emory Clayton. And, Professor, there is Herman Cain on our Phil TV screen. You had some rather pointed things to say about Herman Cain.
I did have very pointed things to say about Mr. Herman Cain, and I said them, Phil, to an audience, not only in a lecture hall at L.A. Canyon, but also to people that have come to see me speak on a number of occasions at Quammen Hall, which is where we do most of our political speaking, and there have been some controversial moments.
Well, I'm speaking of one in particular, and I'm talking about last Thursday night, and I have the quote right here. Rosa Parks would sit in the back of the bus had she known there'd be a guy like Herman Cain.
That is correct. I did say that, yes.
In other words, Rosa Parks wouldn't even have bothered to break down those barriers had she known that a Herman Cain would be the result.
That is exactly what I said. That is exactly what I said, yes.
And why do you say that?
Well, I don't think it needs any explanation. I think it's very obvious to all that Herman Cain is the kind of black man that has been dying to get into the white man's club for a long time.
Oh, man. This is going to be one of those hours, huh?
Let me just finish here, Phil, before you begin your commentating. Herman Cain got into the white man's club by way of a pizza parlor. Now, an awful lot of black businessmen have to make it into the white man's closed club by way of these borderline businesses. If you talk about a lot of white business people, you're talking about white business people that own companies that make machinery, or they own a company that is a pharmaceutical, or they own a company that might be a bookbinding, or a company that's involved in computer parts, something that is vital. And dare I say, high-end quality. But if you talk about the emerging African-American businessman, you find pizza parlors and barbershops and this kind of nonsense, and the dollar-off store and this kind of nonsense, you know. And so it's...
Yeah, so what?
I'm sorry, I was speaking. And when I get done speaking...
No, we're having an interview here, though, Professor. So what?
So what? I don't think that's what empowerment is all about. We say, so what? What do you mean? So I say to a grandchild of mine, look at how far we have come in this country. Take a look at this black businessman. He's got a dollar... he's got a dollar-off store, a five and dime in an otherwise vacant mall. I don't think that's achievement at all. Now, when I talk about Herman Cain, I'm certainly not talking about a man that has a dollar-off store or a man that's selling barrettes or selling hair picks from a corner, from the trunk of his car. But we are talking about a man that has a substantial business. But it is a pizza parlor. It's a pizza joint. And when you talk about Herman Cain and you cut through all of the aggrandizement and the self-aggrandizement, and you cut through all of the people that form this sort of coterie of adulating individuals. Most of them are white people, and that's fine. They call him a businessman, but really at the very heart and soul of Herman Cain is thick crust of thin. You see what I'm saying? At the very heart and soul of Herman Cain is, what kind of toppings do you want? You see, you're not talking about that. And you were talking yesterday about a young lady that's marrying this Paul McCartney, who's a former member of the Beatles. This is a young lady come from a trucking company. These are people that move freight. These are people that have large containers of vital equipment, and they move things by way of rail line. They move things by way of truck. They move things by way of ship. These are people that are involved in the transport of vital materials across the country and across the globe. That's a business. We talk about Herman Cain, what are we talking about? Put some more Parmesan on the top of that. You see what I'm saying? So
what you're saying here is that the business that he's in just isn't good enough.
It's not just about the business. It's about the fact that we come all this way. And I just heard you talking to this man, Ted Bell, at Ted's of Beverly Hills. Now, he's got a steakhouse. A steakhouse. Now, you know, a steakhouse is about as... when it comes to food, when I was growing up, the best food you could get was a steak. You said to a man, I'd like a steak. And, man, you were talking. You were saying, I want a first-class meal. If you can get me a steak, man, I'd love that. That was always a first-class meal. So now, Ted's of Beverly Hills, a steakhouse. I'm looking at Herman Cain running for president. And what are we talking about? We're talking about a guy saying, I'm going to go down and get me a thin slice. I'm going to go down and get me a Parmesan, a Parmesan garlic bread. I'm going to go get me a... You know, this is not what I call an empowering business.
Look, here's a guy that's a multimillionaire, and he is a man who's worked his way into a position of running for president of the United States, and now it's not good enough. Now the business isn't good enough. Now the guy is, he's got too many white supporters. Now he's a conservative. This is exactly what I'm talking about, Professor. Whenever I hear people criticizing a conservative black candidate for anything, it's usually the white progressives. I know you're not white.
That is exactly right. So I'm speaking from a far more, I would say, knowledgeable point of view.
All right, but be that as it may, it always gets into some denigration of the man as a sellout, as an Uncle Tom, as an Oreo. He's not good enough this way, he's not good enough that way. You can't talk about what the guy stands for.
What does he stand for? You tell me, what does he stand for?
He stands for the traditional Republican issues. He stands for the for what Republicans stand for on those issues, empowering small businesses, getting the tax the taxation on small businesses off their back, lowering the income tax, personal income tax and otherwise, making sure that regulations are at a minimum so that business can grow. The Republican Party has never been about anything other than making the environment, you know, good for business. Now, you know, on the other side of that are the Democratic, Democratic Party, and those are people who have traditionally looked out for the worker, the individual breadwinner, the individual worker who is a married man or is beginning a family or has a family, making sure that he is protected, making sure that he is empowered. So these are two parties that have always been on the opposite sides of this. Of this fence, you know, the two eyes, if you will, of America, labor and management. And I just think every time I hear about a guy like a Herman Cain or anybody.
When's the last time you heard about a Herman Cain? Now, other than Herman Cain, give me a black candidate for president of the United States like a Herman Cain. We had Barack Obama. Now, Barack Obama comes from a background as a neighborhood organizer, comes from a political background. Now, people spit that out of their mouths like that's an ugly thing. I'm not saying that what Barack Obama did or what Barack Obama represents or what Barack Obama is. I'm not saying it's anything that I necessarily admire. I'm not saying Barack Obama's my man, you know. I'm not saying he's a great president. He's a black man, and I voted for him. But I ain't. I'm not telling you I like Barack Obama any better than I like anything. Any other candidate for president, maybe even less. So he is no great shakes, Barack Obama. And I think you find a lot of black people that think Barack Obama, I just as soon watch a ball game. You know, I just as soon see what else is on, read a book rather than listen to him and look at him. But now come Herman Cain, and I got no choice. I got to suck up to Barack Obama, because it's either that or it's Herman Cain. So the pain that you're talking about, I heard that Ted Bell talking about, the pain is definitely on my side and other people like me, because that drives a wedge and makes us support Barack Obama, who ordinarily, after I saw the job he did over the first 2 years of his presidency, ordinarily I wouldn't spend half a second picking him up off the street if he tripped and fell down because he'd had too much to drink.
You know? All right, well, what you're getting into now is a disdain for Barack Obama that you have to ignore because Herman Cain's on the scene now and you've got to stick up for Barack Obama. Why is all of this about race?
Because it's all, what do you mean, why is it all about? You want to make me, what do you mean, why is it all? It's always about race when you're black. You understand me? You know?
No, but I mean, why can't we talk about a guy's,
why can't we talk about a man's qualification? I'd love to talk about a man's qualification. I'm a black man, so I talk about race. I have to talk about race. Because if I don't, you will. You know. And
well, what makes you think I'm going to talk about race?
Oh, come on. Herman Cain, the reason why he's getting so much heat, if he's getting any at all, is because he's a black man that white conservatives can vote for.
All right. Well, just like Barack Obama was a black man that liberal white liberals could vote for. You think there's any difference? You know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of difference. I voted for Barack Obama, too, and I'm black. And the difference is I would not vote for Herman Cain. And I'm sorry I did vote for Barack Obama. I wish I would have voted for Hillary Clinton. I wish I would have voted for somebody better. Barack Obama is no damn good. He's not a good president.
I don't think he's going to make a. I don't think he's going to get elected to a second term unless he pulls his head out of his you know what. And so I think what we've got, we're stuck with a bad president, Barack Obama. I don't like him. I don't want to vote for him. And now I have to come out and support him because of this guy Kane.
All right, let's take a break here on the Phil Henry Show with Professor Emery Clayton talking about Herman Kane not being any more representative of a positive black experience in America than Barack Obama because he owned a pizza parlor. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL is the number, and we're online at philhenryshow.com, and you can watch Phil TV in HD. Right there is a picture of Herman Kane. And we're talking about Herman Kane here with Professor Emery Clayton of L.A. Canyon College. So my original point was this. You can't see a black conservative run for president in this country without liberals getting crazy and getting into the race baiting themselves. I find white liberals to be the most hypocritical people in the world. The Aunt Jemima stuff they did with Condoleezza Rice.
Wait a second. They were simply saying that Condoleezza Rice was doing a female version of Step and Fetch It for the Bush White House. That's not racist. That is actually trying to argue against racism by saying, empower yourself, don't do Step and Fetch It.
And wait just a second. What do you mean, empower yourself? So in other words, when a liberal targets a conservative African-American, and they say, you know, you're nothing but an Oreo, an Uncle Tom, a Step and Fetch, however you want to put it, they're not being racist. They are pointing out something that needs to be pointed out.
Yes, absolutely. Now, on the other end of it, if I, as a liberal, I see what you... So, in other words, you think that if I point out to your audience that Herman Cain is Uncle Ben, you say I'm being racist?
Well, what's the difference? What's the difference between you saying that Herman Cain is Uncle Ben and a liberal saying that Condoleezza Rice is Aunt Jemima, or is whatever the hell, a Butterfly McQueen? I mean, what is the difference?
The difference, Phil, and I'm going to explain this, because you're asking a question that I don't think it's a good question, but I think it is a question that will possibly confuse some people. I think it's going to confuse some people. Here's what I'm saying. Herman Cain is working a pizza stand. Now, that's not what I call a respectable living for a race of people that have tried to struggle and strive and survive in the harsh and hostile climate, economic climate of America. A guy working a pizza stand. Now, if I point out that he's working a pizza stand and I say he's Uncle Ben, I think that is an accurate description. And
so, in other words, Uncle Ben, by the way, didn't own his pizza stand. Uncle Ben was the guy, was the porter in the railroad car.
Well, what are you saying then?
If you're talking about Uncle Ben.
I'm talking about Uncle Ben converted rice, is what I'm talking about. The box of Uncle Ben's converted rice.
Okay. Uncle Ben's converted rice, that character was a guy that worked as a porter on a railroad car.
So?
He didn't own the railroad?
All right, I understand what you're saying, you know, but I think that's chicken stuff. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that is chicken. I wish I could say the word that I want to say, because that is nothing but chicken stuff to talk about.
What's chicken stuff about that? Herman Cain owns his own business, okay?
Herman Cain, and you belched in the middle of that word, but you said Herman Cain what?
Excuse me. Herman Cain owns his own business. Uncle Ben didn't.
All right, what about Condoleezza Rice? What business did she own? Yeah, she didn't own any business at all. And there she is, Step and Fetch It for George Bush.
Why do you call it? You know, that's an insult. That the most grievous insult of all is to step and fetch it. Like she's just running errands. Here's a young woman who is educated with a doctorate. She was an advisor to at least one or two other presidents. She is considered to be one of the foremost authorities on Russian and Eastern European affairs in the world. She was a pivotal advisor during the invasion of Iraq. She's a part of the National Security Council. Her advice is sought by people in presidents, world leaders have sought her advice. She's written books. How can you say that this is a lady who's a step and fetch it?
Well, look, you're getting into some political area now. You're talking about a woman who you just said you just about elected her queen of the whole universe. I mean, the things that you just said about her puts a guy like me or other men, particularly black men, in a very bad light.
And how's that?
Well, I have not achieved the things she's achieved. So what you've done now is you've taken a black woman and you've thrown up her achievements into my face. And now you tell me she has great achievements, and she does, but I feel like I'm about this big. And, Phil, I've got my thumb and my forefinger not even a hair's width apart. That's how big you make me feel. So,
all right, so if I build up the reality of a black woman's achievements, that makes you feel real small. If I don't, she's Aunt Jemima.
Well, now what you're doing is you're saying I'm not making any sense.
No, you're not making any sense. No, you're not.
I'm not making sense.
No, you're not making any sense. If you're telling me that I can't bring up the achievements of a Condoleezza Rice without making you feel you're about whatever.
I said, I'm holding my finger and my thumb about.
Okay, about the width of a hair. I'm making you feel bad, but if I don't bring those achievements up, then she's Aunt Jemima. I don't, you know, this is a silly game. We're going to be back with Professor Emery Clayton in just a moment.
You bet it's a silly game. It's a silly, silly game, and I'm losing. And I bet the house on your silly game. Oh,
Phil Hendry.
We'll be right back.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And that's what I want to say.
All right. We're back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with me is Professor Emery Clayton. And Professor Clayton, we're having a kind of a silly conversation, if you ask me. We're talking about the symbol of an empowered African American, what that means to the rest of the African American population in the United States, and isn't that something that we're trying to get away from? Meaning, people are individuals; they're not a monolithic voting bloc.
But when you say you're trying to get away from that, I don't know what you mean. We're trying to get away from that.
As Americans.
Well, I mean, that sounds good in theory, that you're trying to get away from viewing black people as a monolithic voting block. But the reality is something else entirely, my friend. The reality is that we are a monolithic, not monolithic, but we are a voting block. And we are viewed as a demographic, a desirable demographic. The thing that makes me laugh is I hear a lot of black people say that we're a very, very desirable demographic. We can't get a Democrat elected unless black people support him. Well, that's all well and good. But the fact of the matter remains, black people have gone 100% sometime for the Democratic candidate, and a Republican still gets elected. So I throw my support behind a Democrat like a Barack Obama, and he's a black man. So I'm very proud to cast my vote for a black man like Barack Obama. And I find out at the end of the day, after 2-3 years of this man being president of the United States, he's about as effective as, say, you know, a G-string in a snowstorm, you know. In other words, the man, he has not been able to affect anything. And I'm ready to throw my support behind Mitt Romney. I'm telling you the truth. I'm ready to throw my support behind a black-hating white Mormon before I vote again for Barack Obama. And along come Herman Cain. Now I got no choice. Now I got to vote for Obama again.
Boy, I got to interrupt you here. A black-hating white Mormon.
Well, that is the perception. I don't know, Phil.
Well, perceptions are a very negative thing sometimes, born of ignorance. Why would you go with a perception like that? I thought it was made abundantly clear that this is a doctrine of the Mormon faith that they no longer consider to be a part of their faith, that it is no longer the truth, that it is that it was revealed to the elders, I guess.
What, it was revealed to the elders of black people, that we're not, that they burnt cork, that I didn't get cast down into the flame and get cooked and singed, and, you know, Mormons believe, Phil, and just consider this, Mormons believe that I was held over an open flame. I'm like a roasted mushroom, what do you call it, a marshmallow or something. Now, you may find that funny. And
I don't find it funny, no.
I don't find it funny either, and it's nothing to teach young black people that we're like everybody else, but we got slow roasted. We're like everybody else, but somebody decided to stick us on a spit and slap a little bit of barbecue sauce and brown us up. You're not laughing, are you?
No, I'm not laughing.
Why not? I mean, I thought I was getting off some pretty good ones.
I'm not laughing. I don't think that's funny at all. I don't think the image of that is funny at all.
Well, that's the first for me. I was going to say that we're like Smokey Links. That's not...
No, that's not funny. What are you doing? Are you doing jokes?
I thought it was funny to say that Mormons think we're Smokey Links. That's not funny.
No, that's not funny to me. I'd like to get back to the point of what we're discussing here, which is Herman Cain, his candidacy. You're against it because originally you said you're against it because the guy is a pizza parlor operator, which is a highly simplistic way of gives the man no respect and no credit for what he's been able to develop in his life and build in his life. But okay, you say that what he did for a living, what he does for a living, how he made his millions is not respectable enough. That white people have more respectable businesses.
Well, and I stand by that, Phil. I stand by that. I mean, you're not going to get me to tell you or anybody else that I'm proud. Here comes a black man, and how'd he make his money? But a pizza parlor. I'm glad he made his money. But I'd like to see black people making their money owning automobile manufacturing plants, owning pharmaceutical companies.
Black people own those companies, too. This man here...
Oh, do they now? Why don't you tell me the names of those people?
Well, I don't know offhand. I do know that in the history, certainly in the latter half of the 20th century, there's been all kinds of expansion of African-American business interests into many high-end industries. I'm not going to get into a deep and heavy discussion with you about it right now. Besides, you're the guy that wants to talk about black people being smoky links and on a spit and being barbecued and all this stuff.
That's the way the Mormons look at it. And if I can get back to the point that I was making...
No, that's not the way the Mormons look at you. That's not the way they claim they look at black people now. Now, we can continue this slander and...
What slander?
Well, we can continue to misrepresent the Mormon faith if they say in good conscience and in truthfulness that that is not the doctrine of their church anymore, then I think we ought to accept that. Now, maybe it was, but it's religion. It's not science. It's religion. It's not... it's not necessarily the hard and fast philosophies of Kant or Nietzsche or Plato or Socrates. It's religion, and religion is the most malleable of all philosophies. It's the one. It's the one philosophy that should change as society changes and as people change.
Well, I would love to hear you say that to the Jewish people. That once you tell them, hey, someday you ain't just going to be monotheistic. I think you're going to be have two, three different gods. I don't think you can say that, Phil. And the reason why I brought up this Cain and the Mormon faith is I would rather have voted for Mitt Romney. I was saying something good, that I would rather vote for Mitt Romney than vote for Barack Obama one more time. But now that Herman Cain is on the scene, I'm forced to go back into the polling booth. And I'm forced to do something I never thought I'd have to do again, and that's vote for Barack Obama. And I'm going to have to vote for Barack Obama now, because there's another black candidate. People are going to ask, well, which black man are you supporting?
Why don't you tell them neither?
I can't. What do you mean, tell them? I can't do that. I can't stand in front of my students and say I'm not supporting either. I think what I'll do is, what, Ralph Nader? You know, I did that one year. I ignored Jesse Jackson. I ignored Al Sharpton. I ignored Julian Bond. And I went ahead and I voted for Ralph Nader. And I found out to my everlasting regret, and this was something, Phil, that I found out that Ralph Nader is nothing more than a wonky-eyed freak wearing a suit that he probably hasn't had cleaned in years. And I never combed his hair. Wonky-eyed, weird-ass. I'm not kidding.
So you've laid down some pretty bad votes in your time.
I have. I've cast some bad votes. Yes, I have. And I intend not to do that this time.
Well, with Herman Cain, you're going to have to. You're going to have to vote now for Barack Obama.
I'm hoping that Cain gets muscled out of this race. I'm hoping that Cain gets muscled out. And that it is, and I think it will be Mitt Romney. I have no doubt that it will be Mitt Romney.
You going to vote for him?
I would vote for Mitt Romney before I voted for Barack Obama.
Now, that is a pretty wild thing to say for a liberal, I'm sorry, a liberal African-American college professor to say you're going to vote for Mitt Romney.
You know, Phil, we are not all, as I said, you like to think of black people as a monolithic voting bloc. We are not all out of the same cookie cutter. I'm a man, all right? First, last, and always, I'm a man. I'm my own man. I'm not anybody else. And I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney if this guy Herman Cain gets muscled out. But if Herman Cain's still hanging around, I'm going to have to hold my nose and vote for Obama again. And I'll tell you, I don't know what that's going to do. That could kill me. I mean it. I'm telling you true. That could kill me.
If you have to vote for Obama again.
Yes. And by that, I mean a heart attack. I may walk out of the booth, and that may be it. Because this country's gone to hell in a handcart with Obama at the helm. And I hate to say that about another black man, especially the very first black president we've ever had. But...
Well, I certainly don't think that that's going to happen. I think, I have a far more sympathetic view of Barack Obama than you have. I think he's, I don't think he's been at all a man with ill intent. I think he's tried, and I think that some of his policies have just been the victim of the times, the people. The American people themselves are not really sure in which direction we should go. So,
you think this man Obama would make a good president someday?
I think given another term, yeah. But you know what? I don't know that he deserves another term either. I don't. It's just that's the way the game is played.
Well, I'll tell you what right now. I don't think he does either. But if Herman Cain keeps on running his pizza, he keeps running that pizza mouth.
All right, well, the best of luck to you, professor at school, and we'll have you on as this election continues.
Well, the election, what do you mean the election continues? You mean the campaign?
As the campaign continues.
Well, I might be busy.
Well, I'll call and see if you're available.
Yeah, you do that. Check with my what do you call?
Secretary?
Yeah.
We'll do it. All right, thank you very much. I might be busy. There is Professor Emery Clayton. Didn't he say some interesting things there?
Yeah, he said he'd vote for Mitt Romney, even though he's black.
Yeah, I think that's into that Mitt Romney Mormon, you know.
Yeah, and that he would vote for him.
Well, didn't you hear what I just got done saying to the guy? I just said to him, I said, why do people keep thinking that Mormons believe that black people are the mud people or the burnt cork people or whatever the hell they... You know, the doctrine of the church was changed. And that's just all there is to that. You know, the Mormon faith is not that old. It's only about 100-some-odd years old from the time that Joseph Smith found the books buried underneath the rocks up in... I mean, it's pretty out there. There's no question about it. The Mormon faith is just as out there as Nation of Islam, which believes in that big-headed scientist.
Oh, yeah, that Yaqub.
Yaqub. What did he do?
He's the guy that made white people.
Yeah, he crossbreeded... Like lower black or paint or
shut up, man. I'll do it. He crossbreeded some light skinned black and got a white man.
Ah, that's it. He crossbred some light skinned blacks and got a white man. And Yaqub was a mad scientist. And what did they do with Yaqub?
I don't know. I forget.
That's a great one, too. That's a great philosophy, too. And you know what? You know what blows my mind? You take that Yaqub jazz from the Nation of Islam. Then you take this cat finding books buried under a pile of rocks in upstate New York, and that's okay, you know, whatever. And then you take this Scientology with the man from outer space that they believe in. And all religions have one thing in common. No matter how ridiculous, no matter how asinine, no matter how much their essential philosophy challenges not only your credulity, not only your ability to believe this horse dung, but it challenges you to keep a straight face, okay? No matter how dumb These philosophies are that challenge you to keep a straight face and not laugh your ass off the minute you hear what their philosophy is all about. But you're supposed to take them serious. And if you don't, they get really upset. You know?
Yeah, like they want to kick your ass.
Yeah, like Nation of Islam, man, they beat your ass up.
Nation of Islam will beat your ass up. Scientologists will beat your ass up. You know, or who's the other one? The Mormons? The Mormons? Good Lord. They had that posse. Remember that posse they had? They made a movie about it. What were they called? I don't know.
I think it's called like the Mormon Posse or something.
The Mormon Posse. I don't know. But they had a bunch of hired gunmen. I think it was like the bodyguard for Joseph, or what's the guy, Brigham Young.
Is that the school, right?
Well, that's what they named the school after the guy.
Oh.
Brigham Young. And he had these this posse of dudes that at his beck and call, they'd go out and just, you know, slaughter people. And that slaughter that took place in 1856, was it 1856? You look it up. It happened on, believe it or not, September the 11th. So that date, 9/11, is a bad, bad day, man, in American history. That's like, if America has unlucky numbers, those are the numbers, 9 and 11. Because on 9/11/2001, we had the terror attacks. On 9/11/1856, I don't know how many people were slaughtered in cold blood by this Mormon posse. And I don't mean, you know, I'm just telling you, you know, I'm not trying to defame anybody, but I mean, it's what happened, so...
How come we call it 911 now? We got to change the number on that.
Yeah.
Our emergency number?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. Maybe that's why the system gets overloaded. It's just an unlucky number. Let's use a different number.
You could use, like, what, 511 or something?
I don't know, 511. 611 is... 411 is information. 611 is to get your phone fixed. 311 is...
But you said it wasn't Canada.
Canada's 911, ain't it? Yeah, Canada's 911. England is 999. I don't know. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Our news and information hour coming up, and Bud and Robert will have a. You guys got another debate coming up, right?
Yeah, it's on Mormons.
Oh boy, you guys are going to OD on the debates, man. When's this Iron Swine coming up? That's what I want to hear. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. And I pull up here on Phil TV and HD. This is a book that was written about this Mountain Meadow massacre called American Massacre. It was written by Sally Denton. It was actually September the 11th, 1857. And it was 140 people in a wagon train that was carrying gold that was attacked. And 140 people were slaughtered, I should say. I don't know how many people were actually in the wagon train. 17 children under the age of 8 were spared. It's called the incident in an open field called Mountain Meadows has ever since been the focus of passionate debate. Is it possible that official Mormon dignitaries were responsible for the massacre? In a riveting book, Sally Denton makes a fiercely convincing argument that they were.
Yeah, it says she's Mormon and everything, too.
She's of Mormon descent, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. And so I don't bring that up to be a jackball. I don't bring that up to say, see, Mormons suck. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, if anything, you know, when I was talking to Professor Clayton.
Yeah, you were like saying Mormons, they don't believe black people were singed.
Yeah.
Black people were singed?
Ain't that what they believed?
I don't know. Robert, do you know?
Why would I know? You said Mormon people singed, not Mormon people, you said Mormon people believe black people got singed.
Yeah, like they got slightly singed, or slightly, just very lightly browned.
Lightly browned.
Ain't that what you said?
No, I didn't say that. I don't know what they believe. I thought they believed that black people were Cain's descendants.
Yeah, that's it.
And that that what they used to believe was that black people were Cain's descendants. And that Cain, you know, was a piece of dirt because he killed his brother Abel. And then they all, you know, and Cain's descendants all got darker and more, you know, lightly tanned. I don't know. But nonetheless.
Maybe Cain was black.
Yeah.
Maybe Cain was black. Okay. Maybe the whole family was black. You ever thought about that?
How's that possible?
What do you mean, how's that possible? What is that supposed to mean?
Well, I mean, if Cain's descendants was black, but the whole Adam and Eve family was black, then what's the difference between Cain's people and Abel people?
Yeah, I think that maybe Cain was born and he was black, and that kind of caused a rift in the family, like there was a hassle.
Well, why would there be one black kid and everybody else is white?
Yeah, they were racially discriminating against him.
Yeah.
In a family?
Yeah.
Okay, so the kids are born, Adam's white, Eve's white, Cain's white.
No.
I'm sorry. Cain's black, but Abel's white.
Yeah.
But Cain's black. And they racially discriminate against Cain until he decides to clobber Abel.
I think yeah, he got pissed off.
Oh, get out of here, will you guys? I'm telling you. This is what I'm talking about. This is exactly what I'm talking about. The screwiest, goofiest ideas that run contrary to any kind of science are embraced by these religions, and these religions are no older than our country. In some cases, in the Mormon, the case of the Mormon faith, it's not even as old as America. And okay, so you believe this, that, and something else. Good for you. Fine. Not a problem. But here's an example of what happened to the Mormons at that particular time. And this is what is really sad about the president that preceded Abraham Lincoln. And because I read this biography of James Buchanan, I was fascinated. I was like, well, James Buchanan? Now, what the hell? This is the guy that was there before Lincoln. What happened to him? How did the country spin out of control? James Buchanan was a Southern sympathizer, even though he was from Pennsylvania. Oh, and by the way, folks, never has a guy run for president who had more credentials. If you want job qualifications, which is the stupidest thing when it comes to presidents you could ever talk about, James Buchanan had more qualifications. Man, he'd been a senator, he'd been a congressman, he'd been an ambassador, he'd been a member of the cabinet. He'd done it all. Now along comes this guy, and he's the very president that didn't lift his finger to save the United States, James Buchanan. When the Confederates were going to take Fort Sumter, he said, I have no constitutional authority to interfere in what these states want to do. And yet, rewind to 1857, he sent federal troops into Utah, and he said, okay, what's going on here? Well, we're Mormons. Are you, really? Is that what you are? Well, this is a territory of the United States. You can take this guy, Brigham Young, stick him up your you-know-what. All the rest of you people, you can do whatever you want, but this is American territory, and we're going to have American law. So he enforced the federal rule in Utah when the Mormons there, with all due respect, were getting out of control.
What, did he kick Brigham Young's ass?
He didn't kick Brigham Young's ass, but he basically said, you know, the party's over, baby. Let's, put your underwear away, clean this place up, put your toys back in the box. There's dishes that need to be done. You know, we'll be back with our news and information hour of the world famous Phil Hendry Show and our debate between Bud and Robert, whatever that's going to be.
Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows Whither Goest Thou in the American Night. Ah, what poem is that from? Bud Dickman.
What poem?
What poem is that from? Robert Leonard.
I don't know.
Howl. By Allen Ginsberg, Whither Goest Thou in the American Night. Anyway, welcome to our program, and I don't mean to be overly erudite, but in fact, I'm not even sure it does come from that poem. But, you know, it is talk radio, so I could probably tell you that that I invented it, that I wrote it, and about, a good 40 to 50% of the audience would believe me. Now, we have an episode of Iron Swine coming up. Is that right, guys?
Yeah, we practiced it and everything.
We've been rehearsing it.
So we're not going to have a debate.
I don't think so.
All right. So this is a Iron Swine, and you want to tell me?
Not really.
All right. Let's go now to the offices, whatever.
Just introduce it, will you? Just.
Yeah, okay, bud. Don't give me a hard time, man.
Yeah, but I don't just.
All right, fine. Here's Iron Swine.
It's Iron Swine.
Yeah, it's Iron Swine, and today, Iron Swine You've got to go to Utah where the Mormons is out of control.
Yeah, I just want to get called up with the Mormon. Hello, Iron Swain.
Yeah, I'm calling from Utah.
Yeah, what's up?
The Mormon here, man, I'm in a wagon train, and every man, they come down.
Did they massacre you and everything?
Yeah, they did.
All right, I'm on my way.
So then Iron Swain,
Then Iron Swain come down to Utah.
Okay, which one of you is Mormon Young?
No, but I'm Brigham Young.
Yeah, which one of you is Brigham Young?
I'm Brigham Young.
You're under arrest for being a douchebag. Wait a minute. I didn't do the part where you're in the house.
Yeah.
Hey, Brigham Young, this is Iron Swine. Come out with your hands up.
What are you going to do about it, douchebag?
I'm going to burn you out. And this is the United States government and everything. And President Lincoln, President Buchanan, told me to come and get you.
Okay, I surrender.
Iron
Swine does it again. What?
Although I do like the use of the phone. That was a new...
That's something we threw in.
Yeah.
No, that's very good. It's very good. All right, so Iron Swine arrests Brigham Young, huh?
Yeah, and we also used a phone. You like the bullhorn?
I like that. Come on out with your hands up, Brigham Young. That was great. All right, so thank you very much, guys. That is another episode of Iron Swine, which, by the way, we got an email from someone saying, where did you get the name Iron Swine, bud? Do you want to tell people?
Yeah, well, that was back when the swine flu was happening, and that was like 2 years ago, and you got swine. Remember when Jason got swined up?
Yeah, Jason got nailed with swine flu that year, and everybody felt bad for him, and he got that Tamiflu. And he was really sick. I never knew how sick you could be with this swine flu. And then sure enough, I got it. So, you know, Jason got sick with it. Barry Louise got sick with it. I got sick with it. And so we decided that we would invent a character named, or you guys invented the character named Iron Swine. And that's where he is. Now he goes out and kicks ass. So it's kind of like a good swine.
Well, yeah, it ain't swine flu. It's Iron Swine.
Right. I think Iron Swine was first. Didn't you guys have him go out and, like, cure people of swine flu?
Yeah, well, he went out, he beat up, you know, or didn't beat up, but he kicked ass on swine flu, yeah.
Okay, great. All right, anyway, welcome to this hour of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, we don't take calls during our news and information hour, but ordinarily it's 877-876-PHIL. I hope that our fan is not creating too much noise. One of the things in the broadcast business that we constantly complain about is the noisy room. You're in a noisy room. Cut the noise down in the room. Well, we've had such warm weather here in the El Pacifico. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of, I want to say like 89 degrees out here on the coast. Now, that's really hot for this part of California, where generally, as I say, we have nothing but fog and sea lions out here. We get 89 degrees up here, and I looked out on the beach today, and there were people out there with umbrellas, and it was going to get toasty. So
yeah, it's supposed to be down 77 degrees on Friday, though.
It's going to cool down on Friday, okay. But as the result, our studio has overheated during the day, and with all of the equipment that we have in here, the studio is going to get warm. There's just no way that you cannot keep a studio cool all the time because of all the equipment we have in Iraq and because of any other numbers of pieces that just remain on because it's far more operable, I think, to leave. Why do we leave pieces of equipment on?
Because it's easier on equipment.
Why don't I feel confident when you say something like that?
No, that's what I heard, too.
I still don't feel confident. Nonetheless, so our studio gets very, very warm, and by the end of the day, obviously, it's just cooking. So I've switched on the fan. If you have a problem with that, Dan, in the control room, please let me know, and I will turn that sucker off. By the way, we're online at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. That's where you can get a live, you can get a backstage pass to watch our live video cast, to listen to our thousands of hours of archives, to subscribe to our daily podcast, which is available to you through iTunes. It is a 3-hour commercial-free rendition of our daily radio show. You can have it delivered to your iPod anytime you want, day or night, and it'll be ready for you when you're ready, not the other way around, baby. That's the beauty of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show podcast. plus our archived video and like I say, archived audio that goes back many, many years, philhendryshow.com, and pick up your backstage pass. So there is Brigham Young. That was the picture that we had on the screen, if you're looking on Phil TV in HD. And what a handsome figure of a man he is. Not. I mean.
Yeah, he's ugly, man.
Guy that, look at that guy's face. And, you know, even, I must say this. Even if it was legal. First of all, the thing about polygamy that I've learned. And I don't know if this is the de rigueur, if this is the way it is, you know, if this is how the polygamy works. But the underage stuff, that's got to go, man. That's no good, baby. No good at all.
Well, yeah, but let's see if they think God let them do it.
I don't care what they say. What they say God said. No, 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 no. You know, I saw them interview one of those girls on, I forget what show, was it Anderson Cooper? Is that what you're watching?
Yeah, with Anderson Cooper, he had that one girl on, and they had on another guy that was no longer in a religion.
Oh, yeah, they had another guy on, it was still a fundamentalist Latter-day guy. I don't know, you know, those creeps. This guy says that, well, no, I don't marry underage women, but he didn't sound too bright. You know, when you ask him enough of these questions, so much of a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, when they say, well, I have faith, 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 I understand you have faith. But when your entire motivation in life is based upon just faith, you have abdicated your responsibility to come up with the logical answers for questions, then that's a abdication of responsibility that goes a little bit too far. But anyway. So the whole thing about that polygamy thing with, like, girls, underage girls, it's no damn good, man. That's jail. Now then, moving on from that.
Rest of it sounds pretty good, huh?
No, the rest of it doesn't sound pretty good. The rest of it sounds funky. Because it's not really, I don't know what it is. You're supposed to, the women, I look at it from their point of view, they're supposed to be sisters. But be that as it may, you're married to 10, 20 women, and they all have those buns in their hair, and they wear those prairie dresses. How good is that?
Yeah, that doesn't look like it's too good to me.
Exactly. Now, I'm kidding, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, it's true. If you're married to, like, 7, and what, like Hugh Hefner, what if all the Playboy bunnies had buns up in their head and everything?
Well, what are you talking about?
The Playboy bunnies.
The Playboy bunnies? You mean if they had the prairie bun on their head?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be weird, man. What if Hefner's whole Playboy magazine was, and it wasn't called Playboy, it was called Prairie Boy or something like that, okay?
Prairie Boy?
Yeah. And it was a sex magazine for polygamous Mormon men, fundamentalist polygamous Mormon men. And so it was called Prairie Boy, and they had the Prairie Boy, not bunny, but the Prairie Boy prairie dog. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you gotta lay down, man.
No, but so he's got a magazine with all of these women, you know, like the Playboy Mansion is now the Prairie Boy Mansion, and all these chicks are running around wearing long prairie dresses and sneakers, and they've got that Little House on the Prairie bun in their hair. And it's just whack, you know, you're not, it's almost like those, and I saw that thing this weekend. Let me tell you something. That Westboro Baptist Church, I remember there was a point where I thought maybe they're kidding, and maybe it was a comedy group. They are the most disgusting human beings in the history of the world, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they are as vile as I've ever seen, and they had little kids out there with them, with their signs, you know, God hates fags, you've seen that. And one of the little boys was hit with a drink that someone threw from a car. Now, yes, you're right. The slob that threw that drink, they should pull that guy over, drag him out of the car, and work him over, no problem. But let's get back to why that child is standing out there on the street corner. These idiots should know that they're going to be the targets of serious ire on the part of motorists. I don't know how many times they get flipped off. I'm watching this documentary, and they must have been flipped off in the hour-long documentary a half a dozen to a dozen times, standing out there in a street corner, people giving them the finger. Of course. You do you not know that's going to happen, Westboro Baptist Church? And I don't want to say anything, okay, because then I would be irresponsible. But I will say this. What if something someday happens that's much, much worse, and you have those children out there with you? Are you too stupid to understand that it's quite possible something more grievous could occur? Are you trying to get those kids hurt? That's what pissed me off.
Man, but they had a little kid there, huh?
They had all kinds of little kids there. They had the little boy and the little girls, and they're all standing there, and they're all with the God Hates Fag signs. I mean, that in and of itself is just as disgusting as it gets. And that Shirley Phelps, who is that hag that I talked to on the air, that I tried to give the benefit of the doubt to, she's like all of those people. They're not wrong. They're all right. And the old man, that Fred Phelps, boy, what a piece of work that creep is. Can't abide, like all of those people, cannot abide discussion, he cannot abide debate, he cannot abide any questioning, because then that means he's got to think about it, which means he's vulnerable, which means he could look foolish, and so he naturally has to be an ass to everybody that he meets. But when that kid got hit with that drink, you know that people are going to be driving by, they're going to get angry at you. In one of the films that I saw, not this one, but another Westboro Baptist movie, somebody busted the window in their van. So there's violence that attends these events. And while I don't think that I don't like it, because I'll tell you something, all it does is make them look great. If anybody victimizes them violently, they just look like the martyrs that they want to be. But what pisses me off is those children are dragged out there by that scum. And these kids then are the targets, just along with the adults, of some of this violent behavior by these unstable asses that drive by throwing stuff out of their car. And if one of those kids gets hurt, what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. Old man Phelps with that Westboro Baptist Church is going to run his big fat mouth about how they're all martyred up. And look at us, and oh, poor us, and oh, poor me. And look at what these fags did done to me, Fred Phelps, as he bends over and points. No, I'm just kidding.
That'd be funny.
No. All right, we'll be back here with more in our News and Information Hour, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Lots of international news, local news. Underwear bomber pleads guilty in court. Well, I should hope so. And Conrad Murray trial defense drops claim that MJ orally ingested fatal propofol. We'll be right back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I am swine.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here in the world famous Phil Hendry Show. There's a picture of Brigham Young and his wives on our. I'm just kidding about that. It's a publicity still from a movie or something, I think, isn't it?
No, it's Brigham Young.
Yeah, it's a publicity. Brigham Young had his cameraman. I'm kidding.
Anyway.
Yeah, your belly jiggled when you did that.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, bud. Okay. Let me get rid of this. We've got all kinds of programs that are running on my computer, and that slows down the marvelousness of the modern technology that is the internet and the computer. If you have too many programs running, then everything is slow! All right, world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, and of course online at philhendryshow.com. Yeah, that was a picture of Brigham Young. In a moment, we'll bring up a picture of Shirley Phelps and Fred, just so you can gag up on that. But I'm just telling you right now, and one of my guys here, Dan, mentioned, and I think it bears repeating, why can't an independent or a third party go to a judge and say, and I'm very serious about this, folks, I don't want to meddle in someone's life and religion. If they want to protest, and when you watch this documentary, you can tell that, and even the documentarian, the reporter that was doing the film, that was doing the narration, said, I got to tell you, he said, for 2 weeks, I was a member of their family. And other than the doctrine that they profess to believe, this God Hates Fags doctrine, he said, I encountered a very warm and loving and fun family. He said, we went bowling. We had dinner together. Now, of course, they could have been putting it on for him, maybe. I don't know, you know. But he said they were deceptively endearing to be around. And then, of course, you remember what it is they believe, this Fred Phelps Westboro Baptist Church. And I don't know why somebody couldn't say, you know, Your Honor, if you go to a judge, these people can protest and do whatever they want, but there have been incidents where people have thrown things from cars. There have been incidents where people are extremely angry and are flipping the bird and doing this kind of thing. These children that they have out there with them could be in danger. They could be putting them in a dangerous position. I don't know, you know.
Well, what do you think a judge is going to do?
Order them not to bring children out to these demonstration sites, to these places where it could be potentially dangerous for them. As a matter of fact, I think it's irresponsible of any adult. I think it's irresponsible of any adult to take a child into a highly charged atmosphere of political dissent or political discourse that is potentially inflammatory, where there could be a violence. I think it's, you know, for instance, people that use kids for this anti-abortion stuff. Marching down the street with a kid. Now, you know how highly charged that debate is. And you got a kid there. Now you got this Phelps family, this clown. Here is this Phelps, by the way, if you're looking on Phil TV and HD. There he is with a cowboy hat. And he looks like a real, and I guess he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. And he probably is. He's an attorney. And now the irony of Fred Phelps is, according to his daughter, who I talked to, Fred Phelps was one of the lead attorneys on Brown versus the Board of Education, which was in Topeka, Kansas. He was advocating on behalf of integrating public schools. Fred Phelps was a civil rights attorney.
You're kidding.
No.
Wait a minute, man. He hates fags, but he's a civil rights guy.
According to his daughter. All of the Phelpses are attorneys. They're all very... This is not a bunch of dumbass white trash hicks. These are educated people. But they've got some religious germ that got into the bloodstream, and now they're living it, man, morning, noon, and night. So there's Fred. We'll find out. I'll find out the truth of that when we go to the break. We got a couple of things that we want to talk to you guys about. As I mentioned, This underwear bomber, what's up with this guy? Conrad Murray, what's his problem? The FBI makes an arrest after Scarlett Johansson and Christina Aguilera emails are hacked. So they have arrested some Florida guy, some 35-year-old troll. Probably looks like that Sean Duffy guy, you know, that real weird ass.
Yeah, the guy looked like he wasn't getting enough oxygen when he was born.
Exactly. So we will talk to you guys about that when we come back. I don't want to start these stories right now. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget our website and your backstage pass available now at philhenryshow.com. You must get a backstage pass in order to enjoy our Phil TV and HD, our thousands of hours of archive material, our daily podcasts, and all of the other goodies that are coming your way by way of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So go to the website and get that backstage pass. And become a member of our family. Become a second-generation member, if you will, of the Phil Henry Show family. All right, we're going to come back and get into this Scarlett Johansson and Christina Aguilera email story and find out who this guy is, this weird-ass that hacked their email.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You see Lady Gaga there? Man, she's looking all jacked up right there, man. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And as usual, here from the El Pacifico, very good to have you guys with us. Very strange things in the news as we continue here in our final half hour of our News and Information Hour. This is the FBI story arresting a 35-year-old Florida man after he hacked into the computer accounts and other devices belonging to more than 50 people, including entertainers Scarlett Johansson, Christina Aguilera, Simone Harouche, Rene Olstead, and others. Officials announced on Wednesday. His name is Christopher Cheney. He lives in Jacksonville, Florida. Lives in a basement with his mother. You got it. He's 35 and he's still at home. No, I don't know. Seriously, but Christopher Cheney of Jacksonville, Florida was indicted on charges of accessing protected computers without authorization, damaging protected computers without authorization, wiretapping, and aggravated identity theft. Unfortunately, Mr. Cheney was able to access nude photos of some of the celebrities, and some of them were uploaded on the internet. Cheney used several aliases, such as Train Wreck Sucks What, A Non-Girl, and Jack's Jaguars 9-11, according to authorities. He used public sources to mine data about his victims, which included both males and females, all associated with the entertainment industry. He allegedly illegally accessed the accounts of more than 50 people. Among them, Phil Hendry, who... No, I'm just kidding.
What if you saw your name there?
I'd fly to Jacksonville and probably kick this guy's ass, and they would arrest me, and they'd call me the new Jack Ruby, you know.
You'd kill the guy?
No, I wouldn't kill him. Anyway, the FBI's Los Angeles office said the arrest was made as part of Operation Hackerazzi, which looked into computer intrusions targeting individuals associated with the entertainment industry. In the wake of the latest celebrity hacking allegations, some have started to assume celebrity photo leaks are the newest front in the so-called hacktivist wars waged by big-name hacking rings such as Anonymous and Louise Sec. These groups have claimed responsibility for taking down bank and government websites. These groups have absolutely no real political agenda. They have no real political purpose. There is no focus. They are angry people who have banded together. They don't even know each other. They don't even know who each other is. They've never been to each other's houses. They don't. They claim that they have, but they band together based upon their shared pain of their powerlessness and how weak they are. And they call themselves something cool, and then they go out and just create all kinds of damage, not really understanding why they're doing what they're doing, other than the fact that they're really pissed off at their low-level jobs.
You think that's the way they are, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they're people who are generally in jobs that they think are below them, below their ability. They're socially awkward. They can't get along with people. They don't really know how to meet people. I mean, this is, and they're all narcissistic to the point where they don't really want to talk about their own problems, because if they do, then they realize what losers they are. Now, but enough about me. No, security experts said connections between celebrity hackers and groups, celebrity hackers, people that hack celebrities, and groups such as Anonymous are thin or non-existent. True. It's obviously to gain media exposure, right? Said Kevin Mitnick, a hacker turned security consultant and author of Ghost in the Wires. It's like everyone's trying to one-up Anonymous and one-up Louise Sec. So somehow celebrities are becoming a target. It's a game that's played by bored and powerless people in order to wreak havoc in the larger world, in a larger, more powerful universe. The first real case of a celebrity hacking attack was in 2005 when hackers logged into Paris Hilton's phone and stole pictures of her, according to Mikko Hyppönen, chief research officer at the F-Secure Computer Security Company. Mikko Hyppönen?
That sounds like a made-up name?
Yeah, it sounds like a made-up name. Sounds like the guy took his username and decided to just legally change it to that. Anyway, those hackers reportedly were able to break into Hilton's phone by correctly guessing the not-so-secret answer to her security question, which was Tinkerbell, the name of her pet chihuahua. Yeah, those security questions, you gotta make them really good, you know.
What's your security question?
Yeah, that's right, bud. I think I'll tell you that. My security question? My security question that I must answer is I don't have a security question. I have just I got a whole bunch of weird freaking things that I do. All right, so that's that, and I just think the hacking into, and by the way, here is Lady Gaga on our Phil TV and HD screen right now, and I don't know. God hates Lady Gaga, says Reverend Fred Phelps. This is an interesting article. Musician Lady Gaga performs on stage at Fred Phelps' 80th birthday party, but he still hates her. No, according to Pop Eater, the Reverend Fred Phelps, head of the infamous Westboro Baptist Church, and they spelled Westboro, W-E-S-T-B-U-R-O. Is that right?
I don't know.
I think we ought to find out. I always thought it was W-E-S-T-B-O-R-O, but he says that God is not a fan of Lady Gaga. In fact, says Phelps, God hates her. Phelps, whom you may recognize from his hugely offensive website, GodHatesFags.com, decided to take a moment during the holiday season to put out a press release explaining why Lady Gaga will, in his opinion, burn in hell. Art and fashion are the euphemisms, the guise under which proud whore Lady Gaga teaches rebellion against God. Incidentally, her claim to the title Lady is sound only if you tack on of the night. Phelps, who is secretly attracted to Lady Gaga and in fact has many pictures of her ass in his church. Okay, enough of that stuff.
You think Fred Phelps probably want to have Lady Gaga, though?
Probably. I don't know what motivates a guy like that, and I who needs to. But, you know, I think you know what I think about Fred Phelps? A lot of what motivates Fred Phelps motivates extreme political thinkers, either left or right. They have very much in common.
What do you mean?
Well, anybody who is ideologically so strident and so wrapped up in their firm conviction that what they believe is the absolute ultimate right and truth of the matter, there's no difference between them and Fred Phelps. It's the same animal. I'm right, you're wrong, I'm always right, you're always wrong. Anybody that calls themselves a lifelong progressive, anybody that calls themselves a lifelong conservative, anybody that says that they're Tea Party to the end of their life and they'll never change, and that's just the way, you know, anybody who is that strident, and people will look at you funny and say, well, of course, isn't that the way we're supposed to be? No! It's not the way you're supposed to be. You're supposed to think smart. That's what you're supposed to be. One day you may be thinking this way. Another day you may be thinking another way. Who knows? Your ability to adapt. You've heard of being adaptable, right? Your ability to improvise may save your life. But if you can't think in any way other than, you know, black and white, this is it, this is the way it is, this is the way it's always going to be, there's no difference between you and Fred Phelps and his band of merrymakers there in Busted Whistle, Arkansas, or wherever the hell they're from. Where are they from, anyway?
I don't know, someplace down like Kentucky or something. Yeah, I think it's like in Tennessee or Arkansas.
Kentucky, Tennessee, or Arkansas. Well, that's really narrowing it down. Anyway, so you, in my opinion, you're no better than them. And if you want to stay as far away from becoming the Fred Phelpses of the world, or the whatever the hell that Sarah Phelps, his daughter, or any one of those other poor people, then remain a little more flexible with your life and your thinking. Okay, don't always think it's this way or that way or something else. All right, and people think it's that I'm kidding or I'm trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be funny. This country depends on it, man. Right now, and I tweeted this today, and I swear to God, I believe this. There was a guy, the private that Patton slapped. His name was Cull. You know that guy?
Uh-uh.
You know the story, Robert?
You talk about George Patton?
Yes.
He slapped a soldier in a war, right?
Yeah. Patton slapped a soldier by the name of Charles Cull, a private, who was sitting on the edge of a bed. He was suffering from some battle fatigue, some battle stress. And Patton walked through this mobile hospital. It was in Sicily. It was right after the American and British and Canadian forces invaded Sicily. And he saw this guy, and he slapped the guy because he was crying. And he was just in a great deal of emotional whatever, you know. And it was Patton's slapping this guy that made big news. And he had to apologize. And of course, Eisenhower forced him to apologize. But the thing that made public opinion sort of divided on it was that while he slapped a soldier who may very well have been suffering from a serious ailment that we now know as post-traumatic stress disorder, it's very real. Back in those days, they called it battle fatigue. In World War I, they called it shell shock. There was another part of public opinion that thought he did a pretty good thing. You know, butch the kid up, toughen him up, you know, slap him and make him, you know, straighten out. So today I'm on Twitter and I said, America is like that private sitting on the edge of the bunk. Boy, do we need Patton to walk up and say, what's the matter with you?
Yeah, man, I believe that. I'll go with that.
Because it ain't like we got battle fatigue.
No.
It's just that we're sitting on the edge of the bunk sniveling away. I know a lot of people want to pat themselves on the back and say, well, I'm out there, I'm doing nothing. Yeah, sure. This country right now is like that private sitting on the edge of the bunk. We need old General Patton to walk up and just boom, right across the freaking chops. Bunch of clowns. Ain't going to happen because...
Patton's dead.
Yeah, because Patton's dead. All right. Suspect and alleged Iranian terrorism plot had key connections. Get a load of this. The alleged plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the U.S. of A. seemed as convoluted as it was cold-blooded, involving an effort by the Iranian government to recruit a Mexican drug cartel to kill the envoy in Washington. God, the guts on these people. But the main suspect in the case, a 56-year-old Iranian-American named Mansour Arabsiar, was peculiarly positioned to advance such an elaborate plot, according to U.S. officials. Arabsiar spent years in the United States, but had connections with elements in Iran's military, including a cousin who served in the country's Quds Force, an elite unit accused of terrorist acts and assassinations abroad, according to the Justice Department. The cousin, identified in a Treasury Department release as Abdul Reza Shahali, worked with another member of the force, Ghulam Shakuri, who also was charged in the plot, and he sounds like he may be Jewish with the name Ghulam. I'm only kidding.
You don't think he's Jewish, do you?
No, I don't. Because Arabsiar lived in Texas, or should I say Tejas, and had frequent business across the border in Mexico, he had come to know other travelers who he believed were narcotics traffickers and possibly capable of carrying out a high-profile hit, the complaint filed by the Justice Department said. Arabsiar appears to have operated small auto sales outfits in Corpus Christi, as well as a restaurant, according to public records. And earlier this year, let's get this thing off of Lady Gaga. What the hell am I doing there? And earlier this year, he began carrying a coded conversations with handlers in Iran, if you'll pardon the expression, handler. At one point, U.S. officials alleged he signaled that the plot would proceed by telling his contact, the Chevrolet is ready, it's ready, to be done. Yeah, that's great code there, man. Well, guess what, baby? Your code and your Chevrolet and your this and your that and your narcotics traffickers and you got busted. You're under arrest. Now the question is as follows. A foreign government, Iran, which we know is no friend of ours and we know is just a gaggle of douchebags. I mean, from the very highest guy, the supreme douchebag named Khamenei, all the way on down to Ahmadinejad, all the way on down to whoever. We know the whole bunch of them are scum. And now we have evidence that they hatched a plot to have an envoy with credentials to represent his country in our nation's capital, fully credentialed diplomat. They were going to come to our shores, and they were going to murder a diplomat under the protection of the United States government. The Iranian government was going to do this. Now, there might have been a time when this country had balls, if you'll pardon the expression, where we would take very decisive action against a government like that. But these days, well...
maybe we ought to take a vote.
Yeah, let's take a vote, man. What do you think? All right, coming back with our final segment here. We'll take a vote here during the break. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
All right, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks for that marvelous bumper music. I don't know.
Yo, what kind of bumper music you want?
Oh, that's fine, it's fine. You know, it's bumper music. Domestic violence is no longer illegal under Topeka, Kansas law. This is one of these headlines that just always leaves me wanting to commit homicide, because you know that that's not the whole story. But they use that headline to grab you and to grab me and to grab us in places where they shouldn't grab us. and trying to get us to get all hot and bothered. Let's find out whether, in point of fact, this is the case, that domestic violence is no longer illegal in Topeka, Kansas. According to this story in the Los Angeles Times, it's no longer in the LA Times fighting for its own survival. Do you understand?
What?
If you're a newspaper fighting for, if I tell you the LA Times is a newspaper fighting for its own survival, what does that tell you about the news that I'm about to read?
Well, they're going to make it so you want to read it.
They're going to make it so I want to read it. Very good.
Yeah, but what does that mean, to make it so you want to read it? Doesn't mean they're lying.
Oh, really? Well, it doesn't mean they're telling the truth either. In fact, it doesn't necessarily mean they're doing either, telling the truth or lying. They could be telling the truth. They could be lying. But what it does tell us is that the facts are secondary to the way the story is presented so that our interest is heightened. Newspapers are going out of business. I don't know whether or not you've been hearing the latest, but that's what's going on, at least the print versions. And in order to keep these things, humping away, they got to write these stories so people want to read them. So the headline says, domestic violence is no longer illegal under Topeka, Kansas law. The Topeka City Council voted on Tuesday night to repeal the city's misdemeanor domestic battery law. The issue, which had become a bargaining chip in an awkward battle over local and county budgets, has so far seen the release of 30 abuse suspects. Felony domestic abuse cases continued to be prosecuted. Well, now, isn't that interesting?
What?
What do you mean, what? I thought domestic violence is no longer illegal in Topeka, Kansas. It says here that felony domestic abuse cases continue to be prosecuted. But the LA Times very, very quickly adds, the Star, which is the Kansas City Star that they're quoting, reported that one abuse suspect has been arrested and released twice since the budget spat started last month. So while they throw in the obvious fact that domestic violence is indeed still illegal in Topeka, Kansas, even though they said in their headline that domestic violence is no longer illegal in Topeka, Kansas, they quickly got your mind off of that fact by telling you that one domestic abuse suspect has been arrested and released. I absolutely do not understand it, said Rita Smith, executive director of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, in the Star's report. It's really outrageous that they're playing with family safety to see who blinks first. People could die while they're waiting to straighten this out. So this is someone who is the executive director of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. That means that's a national entity, not a local entity, not a Kansas entity or a Topeka, Kansas entity. And they're getting a quote from her on a local issue. It has to do with a game of political chicken, ladies and gentlemen, that developed recently when the local prosecutor in Shawnee County, that's Chad Taylor, said he could no longer prosecute misdemeanors because his office's budget had been cut by 10%. Half of Shawnee County's misdemeanors are domestic battery cases, and domestic abuse prosecutions had increased over the last 3 years without extra funding from the county, according to the prosecutor's office. That meant the city of Topeka, which had a misdemeanor domestic battery law but had let county prosecutors handle the cases in recent years, would have to pick up the slack, but it couldn't afford to handle the cases either. So city council members rescinded the domestic battery law to force a stare down with the county prosecutor. The state has its own misdemeanor battery law, and the county prosecutor would still have to enforce state law. So city council members rescinded the domestic battery law to force a stare down with the county prosecutors. And this is all having to do with lower tax revenue. And this is all having to do with a very, very bad economy. And this is all having to do with our inability to make do with what we have. So we are getting into political spats. We're just going to have to make do with what we have, folks. So you guys in Kansas City, you stupid bastards, and boy, they are stupid in that town. You better pull your head out of your ass, and you too in Topeka, and start doing things the right way. Start doing things the Phil Hendry way. Our show is produced by Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, Chris Johnson, and yours truly, Phil Hendry. The world-famous Phil Hendry show is also on... What is that stink, man?
I think it's the ocean.
Boy, the ocean stinks tonight, man. Are the sea lions crapping up a storm out there? Man, close a window. Anyway, the Phil Hendry Show is also online at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass over there at philhendryshow.com. Until tonight, this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Woo!
Phil Hendry.